Passage 1. Questions 1 to 4 are based on the following passage. At the end of the passage, you will be given 20 seconds to answer the questions. Now listen to the passage. Passage 1.
Rhythm in literature is a more or less regular occurrence of certain elements of writing. A word, a phrase, an idea, a pause, a sound, or a grammatical construction. We are also accustomed to this recurrence in the alternate heavy and light beats in music. Our love for rhythm seems to be innate. Witness the response of a small child to lively music. Children love to beat on toy drums or empty boxes. They stamp their feet and chant nursery rhythms or nonsense syllables, not like primitive dancers. As children grow older, they are taught to restrain their responses to rhythm. But our love of rhythm remains. We live in rhythms. In fact, we are governed by rhythms. Physiologically, we are rhythmical. We must eat, sleep, breathe, and play regularly to maintain good health. Emotionally, we are rhythmical too. For psychologists say that all of us feel alternate periods of being in high spirits of concentration. It naturally follows that rhythm, a fundamental aspect of our lives, must be a part of any good literary works, whether poetry or prose. Passage 2. Questions 5 to 7 are based on the following passage. At the end of the passage, you will be given 15 seconds to answer the questions. Now listen to the passage. Passage 2.
There is something ironic and more than a little interesting going on with fully automatic 35mm camera. For some time now, camera makers have been outdoing one another with ever more automatic and increasingly simple-to-use camera. This is great, and has attracted millions of occasional photographers. I'm all for it. But the irony is this. In an effort to regain some of the lost capabilities, camera makers are now offering fully automatic cameras that are tricky to operate than the old manual-only models ever were. Some 35mm single-lens reflex cameras have so many modes and options available that even experienced professional photographers scratch their heads. Ads and commercials tell potential buyers that there is a mode to use for black light subjects, a control to set when using a telephoto lens, a way to adjust the camera, etc. Remember that the point-and-shoot photographer starts recognizing some of the limit actions of a very easy-to-use camera when he or she wants to shoot pictures in situations other than those for which the auto camera was designed. The photographer feels the need for lenses other than the normal focal length and understanding of how to handle unusual lighting situations. Passage 3. Questions 8 to 10 are based on the following passage. At the end of the passage, you will be given 15 seconds to answer the questions. Now listen to the passage. Passage 3.
Social life in America varies tremendously from office to office. Big corporations may have clubs, sports teams, trips, dance classes, or other employee activities which you can join or not as you like. while small companies usually can't afford these activities. In general, people go to lunch with each other by invitation when they feel like it. Usually, people of higher rank would invite those of lower rank rather than the other way around. But lines are not closely drawn. Except for special occasions, everyone pays for himself regardless of whether or not an invitation is offered. It is quite acceptable for men or women colleagues, single or married, to go out together for lunch. This may be the extent to which your office friends will invite you. Although in general, Americans readily take people home with them, they often do not want to mix business and social life. If this is the case in your place of work, you will have to seek your friendships through other channels. Passage 4. Questions 11 to 14 are based on the following passage. At the end of the passage, you will be given 20 seconds to answer the questions. Now listen to the passage. Passage 4.
We human beings are land animals, but we are also closely tied to the sea. Throughout history, the sea has served our needs. The sea has provided us with food and a convenient way to travel to many parts of the world. Today, experts estimate that nearly two-thirds of the world's population live within 80 kilometers off the sea coast. In the modern technological world, the sea offers many resources to help us survive. Resources on land are beginning to grow less. The sea, however, still offers hope to supply many of our needs. The riches of the sea yet to be developed by technology are impressive. Oil and gas explorations have existed for nearly 30 years. Valuable amounts of minerals, such as iron, nickel, and copper, exist on the ocean floor, ready to be mined. Fish farming promises to be a good way to produce large quantities of food. The cultivation of fish and shellfish is an ancient skill practiced in the past mainly by Oriental peoples. Besides oil and gas, the sea may offer new sources of energy. Experts believe that the warm temperature of the ocean can be used as a source of energy, such as hydroelectric power. Technology is enabling people to explore ever deeper under the sea. The new undersea technology is providing divers with diving suits and undersea chambers that are kept at sea level pressure. The development of strong new materials has made this possible. The technology to harvest the sea continues to improve. Experts believe that the problems of exploring the food, minerals, and energy sources of the sea will soon be largely solved. Passage 5. Questions 15 to 17 are based on the following passage. At the end of the passage, you will be given 15 seconds to answer the questions. Now listen to the passage. Passage 5.
The purpose of this session is to train you on the use of the university's new computerized communication system, which will entirely replace the present operation within 2 months. We have now completed the second of 3 stages in the project. All-campus buildings and off-campus sites have already been wired, and the main switching unit is in place. The rest of the wiring and installation of the telephone jacks will be completed by the end of this month. You won't notice much change in the most common use of the equipment, but you will have a set of new features at your disposal. These include automatic memory redial and call forwarding features. We will be talking about this later in the session. I am proud that the system is the result of a lengthy, thorough analysis of the on-campus needs of administration, faculty, and the students, and will easily carry us to the next few decades. The most serious problem plaguing the current setup, that is, a shortage of extension numbers, will never again prevent the university from meeting its telecommunication needs. And of course, our company will remain under contract with the university to provide ongoing technical assistance. We do not expect any major problems, but we will be there just in case. Passage 6. Questions 18 to 20 are based on the following passage. At the end of the passage, you will be given 15 seconds to answer the questions. Now listen to the passage. Passage 6.
Would the world really be so much better off if there were no dust? The answer is, in some ways, yes. In some ways, no. What is dust anyway? It consists of particles of earth or other solid matter, which are light enough to be raised and carried by the wind. Where do these particles come from? They might come from dead plants and animal matter, from sea salt, from desert or volcanic sand, and from ashes. For the most part, dust is not a very desirable or beneficial thing. But in one way, it helps make the world more beautiful. The lovely colors of the dawn and of twilight depend to a great extent on the amount of dust that is present in the air. Particles of dust in the upper air reflect the sun's rays. This makes its light visible on Earth an hour or two after sunset. But different colors which make up the sun's light are bent at different angles as they are reflected by the dust and water vapor particles. Sunsets are red because these particles bend the red rays of the sun in such a way that they are the last rays to disappear from view. Another useful function of dust has to do with rain. The water vapor in the air would not become a liquid very readily if it did not have the dust particles serving as centers for each drop of water. Therefore, clouds, mist, fog, and rain are largely formed of an infinite number of moisture-latent particles of dust. Passage 7. Questions 21 to 23 are based on the following passage. At the end of the passage, you will be given 15 seconds to answer the questions. Now listen to the passage. Passage 7.
Emily Dickinson is one of the greatest American poets. She was born in a typical New England village in Massachusetts on December 10, 1830. She was the second child of the family. She died in the same house 56 years later. During her lifetime, she never left her native land. She left her home state only once. She left her village very few times. And after 1872, she rarely left her house and yard. In the last years of her life, she retreated to a smaller circle of family and friends. In those later years, she dressed in white, avoided strangers, and communicated chiefly through notes and poems, even with intimates. The doctor who attended her illness was allowed to examine her in another room, seeing her walk by an open door. She was thought of as a strange figure in her home village. When she died on May 15, 1886, she was unknown to the rest of the world. Only 7 of her poems had appeared in print. But to think Emily Dickinson only as a strange figure is a serious mistake. She lived simply and deliberately. She faced the essential facts of life. According to Henry James, a famous American novelist, she was one of those on whom nothing was lost. Only by thus living could Dickinson manage both to fulfill her obligations as a daughter, a sister, and a housekeeper, and to write, on the average, 1 poem a day. She read only a few books, but knew them deeply. Her poems are simple, but remarkably rich. Not until 1950s was she recognized as one of the greatest American poets. Passage 8. Questions 24 to 26 are based on the following passage. At the end of the passage, you will be given 15 seconds to answer the questions. Now listen to the passage. Passage 8.
Good evening. You are listening to Pop World of BCD International. I'm Susan Welch. Today, we are going to hear several current hits of the world's most popular artists. Well, first, I would like to say a few words to my dear listeners who are not very familiar with this program. Since many people want to listen to and understand pop songs, radio producers at BCD International have made hundreds of programs over the years. We not only have access to the stars of the music world, but we also have a vast library of golden oldie classics, as well as the latest releases. For those of you who like a bit of background with your favorite music, there's the History of Pop, or The Road to Music. These two series bring you the language of pop music and information about the periods and the artists. If you want to hear from the artists themselves, there's a new series called About the Big Hits. This is based on interviews with popular singers and songwriters. They talk to us about the meaning and ideas behind their songs. If you want to understand the words to the big music hits, Pop World is the program for you. After all, it's hard enough for native English speakers to understand most pop songs. So, if English isn't your first language, you shouldn't be surprised if the words to many songs leave you in the dark. It was to address exactly this problem that BCD International started broadcasting Pop World just over 23 years ago. Passage 9. Questions 27 to 30 are based on the following passage. At the end of the passage, you will be given 20 seconds to answer the questions. Now listen to the passage. Passage 9.
Scientists have developed a way to alter genes in sheep and insert new ones with a measure of high precision that has never been reached before. This is a step toward creating healthier animals and using animals as organ banks. It is the first time the so-called gene targeting has been done in a mammal other than a mouse. Alan Kloman, research director of the same laboratory that helped produce Dolly the sheep in 1996, and his colleagues present their research in today's issue of Nature. They alter the DNA in sheep cells, then use the cells to create sheep by cloning. Two female sheep produced last year with genetic change are still alive. They carry a human gene that makes them produce milk with a certain human protein. The new approach has been hailed as a breakthrough in genetic studies. It allows scientists to insert new genes or introduce change into a specific part of sheep DNA and then create clones carrying the altered genes. Favorable traits could also be added to animals to make their meat or milk more delicious, some scientists said. Passage 10. Questions 31 to 34 are based on the following passage. At the end of the passage, you will be given 20 seconds to answer the questions. Now listen to the passage. Passage 10.
Today, American parents are finding themselves in a dilemma about how to deal with teenage drinking, a serious social problem. A recent survey has revealed that 92% of high school seniors have tried alcohol at least once, and two-thirds take a drink once a month. Alcohol has resulted in a lot of teenage car crashes, as well as suicides and murders. Parents are wondering why they can't help their children from drinking. Now many are beginning to conclude that it is not the kids but the parents who should be held responsible for their permissive attitudes and methods are impractical and ineffective. They try to teach their children to drink responsibly and moderately. Many parents believe that supervised drinking is a safe solution. However, an increasing number of parents fear that this will endanger their children's safety. Therefore, hardliners are striving to form a united front to lay down common rules to be strictly enforced. And the most popular method in some communities is what they call safe homes, where unsupervised parties with alcohol are forbidden. The hardliners think that in this way, their children will learn self-control. But experts and educators fear that such attitudes might invite outright rebellion from the children. Both sides agree that teenage drinking can be dealt with if no excessive drinking attitudes are established early and supported by school authorities. Passage 11. Questions 35 to 37 are based on the following passage. At the end of the passage, you will be given 15 seconds to answer the questions. Now listen to the passage. Passage 11.
Banking began thousands of years ago in very early civilizations. The first bankers were money changers. They took foreign money from travelers and gave them local coins. They carried the money in special boxes called strong boxes to protect it from robbers. Later, people brought their money to money changers for protection. Finally, money changers loaned money to people and charged them interest. The early Italian bankers worked outdoors on the street. They used a bench for their place of business. In fact, the modern word bank comes from an Italian word meaning bench. By the 16th century, banks were popular everywhere in Europe. They were family businesses. Kings and other rich people borrowed money from bankers. In the next century, British bankers were the first people to make paper money. They gave their customers paper notes in exchange for their gold and silver. People liked the paper banknotes because they were easy to carry. After a while, everyone accepted banknotes as money. The first successful bank in the United States opened in Philadelphia in 1792. Today, there are about 14,000 banks in the United States. Passage 12. Questions 38 to 40 are based on the following passage. At the end of the passage, you will be given 15 seconds to answer the questions. Now listen to the passage. Passage 12.
Researchers reported at an American Medical Association media briefing on Thursday that middle school girls who were encouraged to eat better, watch less TV, and exercise more lost weight. But they note that the same program had no effect on boys of the same age. The researchers were able to directly link the girls' weight loss to reduction of their television viewing time. The researchers studied 641 sixth and seventh grade students participating in a health program called Planet Health for 2 years. The program was designed for all students and did not single out obese students. Woven into the existing curriculum of these students were lessons on health behavior, which encouraged them to eat fewer high-fat foods and watch less than 2 hours of TV per day. For participants in Planet Health, obesity actually increased from 21.5% to 23.7%. There was little change among either the Planet Health boys or the boys in the comparison group. They point out that one reason for the differing gender results could be developmental. It's a time of rapid growth for girls. Also, girls may be more interested in these issues of diet and activity than boys are. We need to do more research in these areas. Obesity has increased over the last 30 years among U.S. teens and now affects 25% of boys and girls. Television viewing plays a key role, according to the researchers. The researchers said not only does it displace physical activities, but foods are the most heavily advertised products on children's television. And television viewing time is associated with between-meal snacking. Passage 13. Questions 41 to 44 are based on the following passage. At the end of the passage, you will be given 20 seconds to answer the questions. Now listen to the passage. Passage 13.
Many egg-laying animals merely lay their eggs and leave. Turtles, for instance, and horseshoe crabs, The eggs hatched and the little ones are on their own. The current theory about birds is the earliest birds did just that when they were cold-blooded creatures living in warm places. However, when they became warm-blooded creatures living in cold places, they had to remain on the eggs to keep them warm. For this, they needed a place, a nest. Very likely, the first nest was just a primitive hole scraped in the ground. Even now, many species still lay eggs in this sort of crude nest. Primitive nests found on the ground were fine for some birds, but others began to elevate their nests in branches, perhaps to avoid predators. These early elevated nests were probably loose platforms of sticks and dried leaves. This type is still built by some birds today. The latest development in nests, the most recent vision, so to speak, is the cup-shaped nest. This is the one we regard today as the typical bird's nest. You know, like a robin's nest. Passage 14. Questions 45 to 47 are based on the following passage. At the end of the passage, you will be given 15 seconds to answer the questions. Now listen to the passage. Passage 14.
These days, it seems as if half the books in the bookstores have the word bestseller. What does that mean? The publishing industry does not regulate the use of the term, and there are as many different kinds of bestseller lists published every week as there are publications that write about books. Complicating matters, bestseller lists don't indicate which books are selling the most overall, only which books are selling fastest at the bookstores that list makers think deserve attention. Each list ranks the relative sales of a particular kind of book at a certain group of stores within a one-week period. This means a self-help book that sells 20,000 copies in 1 week will shoot to the top of the bestseller lists, whether or not those are the only copies it ever sells. A novel that sells 200 copies a week for 10 years will never appear on the lists, because each week it will be beaten by faster-selling books. And because bestseller lists are the most effective form of publicity around, they can become self-fulfilling prophecies. If a book is a bestseller, store clerks are more likely to put it in the front of the store, where readers are more likely to buy it. Publishers become eager to publish books like it. This helps account for the uniformity in the books that top all these lists. Books by brand name or celebrity authors. Inspirational and self-help books. What bestseller lists are most likely to reflect these days is the amount of money spent to publicize the books on them. Superstores now allow publishers to pay to place a book up front or in the window or to display advertising. This, plus an author tour or appearances on national TV shows, can propel readers into stores fast enough to get a book on the list. Word of mouth or good reviews rarely generate the dramatic, concentrated sales required. Passage 15. Questions 48 to 50 are based on the following passage. At the end of the passage, you will be given 15 seconds to answer the questions. Now listen to the passage. Passage 15.
Cats are creatures of habit. They like to go to sleep about the same time every day and for a certain length of time. They seem to have a natural clock inside them that tells them when to sleep. Cats supplement their regular sleep with occasional cat naps. Some experts feel that humans could also benefit from this habit. Cat naps help to build up energy in the body. They are also a good way to overcome boredom. Since cats have moods similar to those of humans, some experts believe that people can improve their moods and attitudes by catnapping. People might become happier. A number of famous people have copied cats by taking catnaps during the day. The naps would usually last from 15 to 30 minutes. Winston Churchill took catnaps. So did President Harry Truman, John Kennedy, and so on. These famous people were known for their energy. They were also able to work long hours, often late into the night. And napping was their secret. Perhaps more people could learn from cats and take naps to feel better and live longer.